Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. It's our first one of the year of 2022, I think. That's right, isn't it? 2022. Doesn't seem right, but it is right. So, yeah, it should be a great year. Last year was good fun. This year, I think, is going to be even better with some amazing stuff coming from both Gallagher Brothers. And today's episode is with our good friend Richard Bowes. We look back on 2021, we look forward to 2022, and since recording this a few days ago, loads of stuff has changed as well. So I'll be dropping in and giving you updates as we go. So let's crack on with this interview with myself and Richard Bowes.
One, two.
All right, that's enough dog chat. Welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Our happy new year to author of the Oasis, the ultimate, wait, what was your book called? Some might say the definitive story of Oasis.
Definitive story? Yeah, it was definitive story, wasn't it?
Definitive story, yeah, because that was like definitely maybe and what's the story? I like that. Yeah.
That was the logic, although, you know, the Supersonic book has kind of proved us wrong in that by not having Liam and Noel, it's probably not that definitive. But hey-ho, it's done now.
There we go. But anyway, how are you doing, Richard? You all right?
I'm good, mate. Happy New Year to you.
Yes, thank you very much. Hopefully it'll be a better one than this last couple of years. We'll get on to sort of a bit of a review of what's likely to happen in the Oasis world in 2022, which should be a very exciting year, actually. A lot of probably the most we've had for, you know, what, until since Why Me, Why Not came out, and that, whenever that was, 19. Yeah. But it's always good to sort of look back at this last year. And also, like, you know, when we talked about sort of doing this call and discussing the last year, I just said, just hold off. You know, I've just got this feeling that one of them might drop something, you know, because Noel dropped, we're going to get there in the end, at the, you know, very end of 2020, New Year's Eve 2020. And then lo and behold, he's gone and dropped, what's it called? Trying to Find a World.
That's been and gone.
That's been and gone. Yeah, I was going to say where we
demo
gone.
Part one.
Demo part one. Yeah. So yeah. So I was kind of proven right, but he dropped it on New Year's Day, not New Year's Eve this time.
Hmm. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I thought that, you know, we're going to get there in the end would have been a one off because it was very much, you know, context of where we were. You know, a year ago we were kind of mid pandemic. I think the winter was looking quite bleak, and as it proved, obviously there was excessive winter lockdown, and, you know, we're going to get there in the end was, I think, it's one of the best things that Noel's ever done for the fan base, because it's, you know, I saw some people saying about this that, you know, he doesn't take anything seriously and he's quite flippant, but, you know, I don't buy that, or at least he puts all his sentiment into lyrics, and he's always been like that. You know, he's always been quite blasé about stuff and kind of, you know, always taken, you know, dismissed his lyrics as nonsense or whatever, been flippant about things, whereas lyrically he's always been quite sentimental. And I think we're going to get there in the end was very much that. And speaking personally, you know, the kind of optimism of it, and, you know, some of the lyrics of it were so optimistic, and it was really, I think, a really nice gesture to just to the fans as well. You know, it wasn't a single, it wasn't airplay, it wasn't any kind of, didn't make any kind of, presumably didn't make any money out of it. It was just a kind of a gift to the fans at a really bleak time. And I'd say, speaking personally, I think it was kind of just what was needed. Remember the dream that you're keeping alive. Remember your love for the loved outside. Don't fight the feeling. Don't stop believing what you know. Cause you can't let go, my friend. We're gonna get there in the end. Offset by obviously the new one, which I think is actually quite bleak almost. And he put that in his message that, you know, we didn't get there in the end. And obviously, as at time of recording, we're still in the peak of Omicron. But, you know, it's the very sentiment of it. If you want to attach it to kind of COVID, this COVID situation, it's, you know, trying to find a world that's been and gone. You know, it's that desperation to return to what is going to be normality, but it's never going to quite be that, is it? You know, it's we are living in post COVID times, as it were. And so it's quite sad in that respect. Or alternatively, it could be more about Noel looking at, you know, the constant yearn for nostalgia, or the constant appetite for nostalgia. And, you know, with that, you can kind of look at people asking when Oasis are going to reform, you know, the sentiment of the lyrics, that's done, that's gone. You know, I really liked it. It's, the two songs are very different, but yeah, I really like it. What do you think?
I liked it. I think that the key thing for me is the fact that it says part one in the title, because, I mean, it's 3 minutes long, you know, which is a length of a song, you know, it's short for an Oasis Noel Gallagher song, but, you know, it is a length of a full song, but it doesn't feel like a full song to me. It feels like the first part of a big epic song, you know, because it's very, you know, wistful. It's got the that sort of chord sequence. I think you said it actually on it's sort of similar to the, oh no, I think it might have been Joel. It's similar to the rework Live Forever kind of. It's doing his similar you know, open chord strumming, and he's on his favorite chords. He's on, you know, the sus chords and A minor seven and A7 G D and things like that, which is, you know, it's not the same chord sequence as Live Forever, but it's similar. And, you know, and he's sort of got that kind of similar vibe as that sort of as that Live Forever that came out. Plus there's sort of Birdsong, and it's quite sort of wistful and stuff. If only you and I could try to turn the page, like the winds have changed, they come around now. I do like it. I think it's a sort of classic Noel melodies. It just feels like when it ended, I was like, oh, you know, is that, that's it? You know, where's the chorus, or where's, why hasn't it gone anywhere? And then you think, oh, it has been 3 minutes, you know, but But yeah, so I think if it wasn't part one, then I would have been a bit, oh, okay, well, I don't really think that's very good. But or I'd have to just sort of live with it and see what it was like in the context of the album, like the interludes on the Who Built the Moon album, you know, because actually if you just heard one of those on itself, you'd just be like, okay, what was that? But actually in the context of the album, I think they work really well. So yeah, I'll be really interested to find out if the, you know, what the part two is like, and if part two, you know, then lifts it up and we get like a Master Plan style chorus, or, you know, like like Wish You Were Here, you know, by Pink Floyd or something, that sort of takes a while to get going. But then when it gets going, it really kicks in. So, yeah. So I liked it for what it is, but you know what it's like? The new film Dune. Good for what it is.
I've not seen it, but go on.
Okay, but it's good for what it is. But they've split the book in half or in thirds or whatever. And it kind of ends and you go, oh, well, that was really good, but where's the rest of it? You know what I mean? And so, yeah, so I think it's the, yeah, I really look forward to hearing part two. Let's say that.
Yeah, you're right. It does feel like a kind of precursor to something, because it's quite, you know, it's once again, you know, it's only a demo, as Noel kind of reminds us. And, you know, I always still think of a demo as like Angel Child, you know, Noel and his guitar, but, you know, there's obviously a lot more, he's got his studio, there's a lot more production with it. But it does feel, there's a lot, there's the kind of synthy strings, you know, that kind of, the kind of overlap the bit of the song. And when, after the kind of mid sequence and he just repeats the lines again, it feels like the song's getting ready to, well, the song does change keys, I think, change key and change tone, and it does feel like that could be pursued, and that could kind of open and expand into something, as you say, Wish You Were Here, or, you know, something a bit more epic. But you're right, it does have that kind of maudlin vibe, I guess, or melancholy vibe of the Live Forever recording. I think that's a really kind of astute point. It, yeah, does maybe, and the vibe of the message that he sent does maybe lead to, he's in a bit of a depressed place at the minute. I mean, he's been, you know, he was saying on the kind of the Matt Morgan podcast that, you know, he doesn't know when gigs are going to get back or when things are going to get back to normal. I mean, that to me kind of suggests how removed from things is Noel is, because obviously there were gigs for the whole second half of last year, you know, the venues were packed. There was actually real congestion, and obviously Noel didn't know that because he lives in his own little cloud. But it does kind of suggest that he's kind of been a little bit depressed about life, I think, and which is probably makes for more interesting work, you know. And as, you know, what was it Liam said? Cheer up, you know,
miserable bastard.
Miserable millionaire,
which I thought was absolutely brilliant. I was like, Noel's song, very good. Liam's reply, priceless. He mentions the Winds of Change, which I think is great, which is what the Scorpions song.
And that, a tune as well.
Yeah, but, you know, like that's that sort of thing of always using like song lyrics and song titles from other things. And it's like he's done it a lot recently, actually, specifically. And yeah, Winds of Change, classic.
Well, there's also the reference to Cold Against My Shoulder, isn't there, from the Dying of the Light. You know, he references himself again, which is, we just have to accept that now, I think. That's just what he does, and your nitpickers like us can be mildly put out by it, but he's, you know, he's always been like that. He's never going to change.
So yeah, so like we were saying, that the year kind of ended with that we're going to get there in the end on New Year's Eve, which was a lovely way to kind of end the year and a nice little gift. But then for the rest of the year, we've not had any albums other than like Andy Bell, which we can get onto, but from the main two brothers, we've not had any albums. We had we've obviously the big thing that's happened was the Nebworth release, both cinema and then all the albums and stuff. We've had the Noel Best Of, we've had a And then we just had random songs, really, random other bits and pieces. And the first one was the collaboration that Noel did with Imelda May and Ronnie Wood, Just One Kiss. It sort of kind of, I remember it, when it, hearing about it, and it's one of those when it was logged on kind of like the publishing websites, you know, when they logged songs and we sort of, oh, what's this? But then, yeah, it came out and I really enjoyed it. But then it kind of, yeah, fine, sort of been and gone, really. But I did enjoy it.
Yeah, like you say, it kind of came and went, really. I mean, I don't think it was a single. I don't think it was. And, yeah, so therefore it didn't get... I mean, Imelda May is not the type of artist whose kind of work I'm kind of aware of or would follow on, indeed, many of the kind of media outlets that I would use. She's unlikely to get airplay on with it. But, yeah, it was good little rocker. I mean, I don't know how I feel about Amorous Noel, I've got to say. I don't think he wrote the lyrics or anything, but, yeah, I don't like... Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about Sexy Noel. It's like when McCartney goes sexy. It's like, because he's never been so out and out like that. But a good duet, a good tune. I always forget that Ronnie Wood's on it as well. Interesting. You always want to know how these things kind of come about, don't you? You know, you think, you know, did Imelda May and Ronnie Wood have a song together and then to say, oh, we should get someone for this, let's get Noel. Do you know what I mean? Like, you do wonder how these kind of relationships are formed and come about. And, you know, this is the type of question that you try and ask on the Matt Morgan podcast, but you know wouldn't get read out. So it's just going to be one of those kind of mysterious little things that just exist and, like I say, comes and goes. But, yeah, inessential, but, yeah, a good little tune. Wanna fool around what you say.
Like when we did the collaborations episode, isn't it? There's these random things that he'll just sometimes do, you know, like the, what was it, the Mississippi All-Stars or whatever, and you think, why is he on that? It's just so bizarre. You make sense with Weller and all these other people, but then it is very bizarre that he'll just turn up on these random things sometimes. But yeah, anyway, it's always nice to hear his voice, and like you said, it's a bit different pace from him doing the whole Sexy Noel thing. But yeah, all right. Well, and then the other one that the other sort of duet collaboration we had this year, and it's the only Liam Gallagher solo, you know, non-Oasis Liam release this year, is the duet he did with Ashcroft. So it's the crossing of the Richard Bowe streams, because it's obviously you've written books on both of these people. But yeah, what did you think of that?
Now the thing is, I love that song in particular. Come on, people, we're making it now. Like, I'm back in, when was it, 2000, when it came out on Alone With Everybody. It was the third single from the album. It was far and away my favourite track off the album. I actually have got a lot of good memories, like holidays and stuff associated with it when I was listening to it to death. I just love that version. This one, it lacks the oomph, for want of a more technical expression. I mean, it's, you know, ostensibly an acoustic version. The harmonies are good. It's good to hear the two of them harmonizing in tandem, as it were. And I think Liam does kind of add to it. But as the album as a whole, really, the whole Acoustic Hymns Volume 1 album, I think personally is a little bit unnecessary. Mm. I think a large amount of it was for Richard Ashcroft to fully reiterate the fact that Urban Hymns was majority written by him, and he wanted to kind of correct the record with it a little bit, and because that's who he is and has a lot of axes to grind about his past, it was good. It was, I mean, yeah, you know, this is not my claim, and I think in fact it was Katie who said it, and I think I probably repeated it more than once, but you know, the whole Mel C, Bryan Adams vibe is now something I cannot not think of. When I listen to the track itself. But yeah, it's a great song regardless, and therefore, yeah, it's never going to be terrible. And as I said before, it's great to hear the two of them actually finally on the same track you know, yeah, notwithstanding things like history and Come On and All Around the World. It's nice to see them, hear the two of them, and, you know, a pair of great voices. I would have liked it to have been something original, or indeed perhaps something even co-written between the two of them. But yeah, it was once again possibly inessential, but still good to hear.
Sometimes I feel like I can't move on. Nothing in life is turning me on. But I still see clearly when I see you smiling. You know, when nothing seems to fit, I couldn't see my way through the shit. When every single second of my waking day.
No, I agree. I was disappointed with it, really. And I think if it had been, you know, you end up in that middle ground, whereas if it was a true acoustic version, you know, and you can sort of the two of them sitting around the campfire, you know, with the guitars, that would have been cool. You know, I think that would have been really nice. Or you do a rework of it, you know, a proper rework of it, like in a similar way to how Noel reworks a lot of his stuff, I suppose. And then you think, oh, that's different. You know, they've taken it in a different direction. But like you said, yeah, it was just sort of a very, very close to the original, but just stripping away a lot of the, like, the good guitar work and things like that were in the original version, and yeah, and just made it a bit weak. So yeah, I just thought, yeah, and it did feel a bit When You're Gone, Mel C. And I think, and maybe because it was that stripped down, it the Four Tops I'll Be There comparison was even clearer, I thought. I think maybe I didn't feel that as much when the album came out, whereas it was just so obvious when you stripped it down a bit. But yeah. So yeah, anyway, at least we had something from Liam this year.
Was thinking of you, you never know that I am alive.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, he's obviously he's obviously been doing a lot of gigs, which obviously we'll come to. But yeah, actual material has been quite sparse. Obviously, he's obviously in the midst of recording the new album. So yeah, it was nice to have something at the very, 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 very tail end. Mm-hmm. I could have done without it, but yeah, it was nice.
Cool. And then we did obviously get a couple of tunes from Noel. We got We're On Our Way Now and Flying on the Ground, that both, you know, preceded the Best Of album, which was cool to hear. And it's sort of similar, I think, from the, you know, we had the Who Built the Moon period, which obviously that very contained period of time he had with David Holmes. And then you had the sort of the Black Star Dancing, those three EPs, which should be, they should be called, I mean, maybe we'll call them the three EPs or whatever, but you know, they are such a specific thing, aren't they? Like the 2020 EPs or whatever it should be, I don't know, but they are such a, they feel like an album, really. But yeah, and then so we had those, obviously, and this feel with Flying on the Ground, On Our Way Now, Get There in the End, and this new one, it feels like we're getting away from these. He's sort of got that kind of 80s sort of dancey pop, you know, vibe out, and he's sort of more going back to his traditional kind of sound. And I wonder if that's then going to be, you know, the route we go for this new album.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I have to say, I look at it slightly differently. I think you could probably, I've had this conversation with my friend because he can't stand EPs. He wants to have albums. He's like, when's Noel going to do another album? And it's like, well, if you add in We're On Our Way Now and Flying on the Ground to the 9 EP tracks, or the 9 original EP tracks, not including the remixes, you've got an album therein. And, you know, or you're right, there was a lot of, obviously, Black Star Dancing and This Is the Place, and Blue Moon Rising were a bit kind of 80s poppy, but you also had, you know, Sail On within that. You know, you had Rattling Rose. They're a bit more kind of traditional kind of songsy. So I think those two kind of sit within that. I mean, it wouldn't, you know, it's not a coherent album in the way that Who Built the Moon is, because the differing styles are kind of all over the place. But I think you could probably look that within one area, but it's Noel kind of doing a bit of housekeeping, isn't it? You know, We're On Our Way Now was what written between his first two solo albums, and you can tell, you know, it's very much of that ilk. And you can almost see him going, well, that's inferior to The Dying of Light or whatever, but it's the same type of song, so I'll discard that. But, you know, it's still a worthwhile tune. We're On Our Way. I mean, of the two singles from Back the Way We Came, I think I love Flying on the Ground. I think every time I hear that, I think I love it a little bit more. And I wasn't that impressed at first. I was a bit like, yes, okay, it's a bit B-sidey. You know, it's Noel doing Bacharach, which is quite good. You know, good to hear after so long. But the more time goes on, it's so catchy. I think, and it's simple, but obviously the production is quite lavish. But it's still at its heart, you know, a kind of Noel Gallagher pop song in the vein that he was writing 25 years ago. But I still find myself, you know, 6 months on, I still find myself singing it every now and again. Albeit just the chorus. The verse is fine, but the chorus is, I think, I mean, I'm not going to say up there with the best stuff he's ever done, because that would be a ridiculous claim. But it's still of his more of the recent of the stuff in the last few years. Certainly, I think it's probably holds its place well amongst that. Yeah, I'm not objective about Noel Gallagher, but yeah, I love that one. I think it's a beautiful. It's kind of very. It's a reminder that, you know, no one does kind of a cinematic romance in quite the way he does. I mean, I say cinematic, that's probably helped with the videos as well, which were all kind of quite, you know, old British kind of style of film, which is probably put an influence in my head. But it's that style that he's made his own, and that can only be him. And yeah, I love it. I think it's great.
No, I agree. I did prefer Flying on the Ground. We'll get on to the best song of the year. So I did a tweet about this and put it out. Noel and Imelda May got 4%, Liam and Ashcroft 21%, Flying on the Ground 25%, and We're On Our Way Now got 50%, which I thought was interesting. I mean, but I think it might just be the fact that We're On Our Way Now came out first, and so there was more hype about it when it came. I reckon if it had been the other way around, because I think Flying on the Ground is probably the more interesting song, where it's got a bit, you know, a bit more catchy, a bit more about it, whereas Runaway Now just feels quite sparse and open, you know what I mean? Whereas Flying on the Ground's got a little bit more of a, it's more of a foot tapper. It's got that Motowny, like you say, Bacharach feel to it. So but anyway, best song of the year is We're On Our Way Now. According to the fans.
You can't argue with the people, can you?
Good luck. Doesn't cast no shadow. You chose to drift away. Look at you now. Truth can be so hard to swallow. Hey now, you got the love
I wasn't sure if the Liam Ashcroft thing would win it, because like the in the Noel Liam divide, actually the Noel would split, you know, 50% would vote split between those three, and then Liam would take it, but no, he didn't in the end.
Did International Magic get anything?
No, well, you can only have four choices on a Twitter poll, can't you?
Of course.
So yeah, and I thought, so I mean, that's a good segue. So yeah, the only other new track that we had on the album was on the Noel's Best Of, obviously. So, you know, it was good to get that Best Of, and it was a nice mix of songs. I mean, we talked about it when it came out, kind of the around the track listing and the choices and the different versions and stuff. I mean, have you listened to it much? Is it something that you do tend to go back to? Or to be honest, I haven't really. It's not, I tend to listen to my favorite songs in the order I choose, not necessarily the collated way.
Oh, I listen to the album itself. I mean, probably once or twice. But then again, similarly, you know, I absolutely would have rinsed all those singles when they came out. So I didn't really, not to say that I'm sick of them, but I don't, you know, there's no compulsion to listen to them again. Do you know what I mean? When there's other music out there that I can listen to, you know, I mean, when I'm half cut probably, but you know, ultimately it would have been the three new tunes. I mean, of the stuff on the box set, you know, I like the coral, the Skeleton Key reworks the most. They're probably the best ones for me. International Magic, again, similarly, you know, it's obviously from this kind of first album era, and it's got that vibe. You know, it does very much feel like Noel circa 2010 to 2012. And it's good, you know, it's good. It's once again, it's a good instrumental number. I mean, it's a bit, you know, meandering in the way his kind of instrumentals have a tendency to be, you know, thinking of Can You See It Now? Mm-hmm. I Can See It Now. Or Evil Flower, you know, it's quite repetitive in their own way. But, you know, I'm glad we, I mean, I'm, obviously, you know, it's from that era because that was the name of the DVD. So, yeah. So it's obviously from that era. But yeah, I'm glad glad we got it. It's nice to have a bit of a vault clear out for Noel. Yeah, once, like you say, not one I'll probably go back to that much. But yeah, nice little one to add to, yeah, I'd say to the collection. As for the Best Of, yeah, I've probably listened to the bonus disc more than anything else.
Yeah.
Even that, not too much, to be honest, because once again, they're just reworks. The Man Who Sold the Moon acoustic is brilliant. I listened to that a lot when it came out. But yeah, once again, kind of nice to haves, but I'm personally all about new songs rather than reworked versions, generally speaking.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we said it at the time, but it wasn't... acoustic, when it says acoustic mix and you think, oh cool, is this like a different version? But it's not, it's just they've just taken the same version, they've just turned down the other instruments, and you think, oh well, that's not really a, you know, that's not really what you call an acoustic mix there, is it? It's just you've turned down the other instruments. So yes, a bit slightly annoying, but there you go. All right, so what have we got then? So, yeah, so we had the Best Of Oasis Nebworth. I suppose that's the big thing. And I said, you know, best album by Oasis / ex-Oasis member. I asked the people. Glock, Pattern Recognition, Andy Bell's dance project got 3%. The Deja Voodoo re-release, Gems, Heavy Stereo, a band got a re-release. That got 4%. The Noel Best Of got 19%, and Nebworth got 74%, which is, you know, which I think is fair enough. The Glock one I really enjoyed. I think it's I think it was a step on from the first Glock album and the other bits and pieces he's done. I think personally, just because I'm less into the, you know, just pure kind of chill dance stuff, and I tend to prefer traditional songwriting. And this album had more vocals, and it had more kind of there was sort of the start track and the end track were sort of 20 minutes long each, but then in the middle there was sort of quite a few closer to pop songs. So for me, that was kind of that I did really enjoy that, and I'd like that album. I listened to it quite a few times. The Deja Voodoo re-release I thought was good. I mean, I'm not a huge Heavy Stereo fan, to be honest. I think they're a good kind of Brit rock sort of, you know, they're decent, but I didn't think they were amazing. And it was nice to have some bonus tracks. I'm pleased for them that they're getting that recognition. They get the re-release. I thought it was a shame that Gem didn't do any publicity for it. Number one, because it would have been an opportunity for me to get him for the pod, the same way I got Andy Bell when his solo album came out. It's like, you know, if he was going to do publicity for it, then I might have got him, which was a shame I didn't. I think the drummer, Nick, did a few bits and pieces, which was cool. I meant to get him, actually. I didn't in the end. But, the only other thing I was going to say, it would have been nice to have sort of demos and unreleased tracks, whereas they tended to fill out the extras with live versions, which is fine. But, you know, if you're going to do a reissue like that, then it would have been nice to have some more unheard kind of stuff. Did you get a chance to give those a listen?
I did. I mean, funny enough, I was actually in a similar position to you when I was kind of approached by the editor at Live Forever to say, oh, do you want to review this? And also, we're trying to get Gem for an interview. And I obviously was like, yes, I would love to do that. Please put me down. But yeah, we got notification back saying, yeah, he's doing no publicity for it at all. But I think he did a few signed prints, but that was it. He didn't really have any other kind of involvement in it, which was a shame. I mean, it's kind of the album itself. It's pretty much their whole career, wasn't it? Because it's all the singles that weren't included on the debut album. And then were there that many alternative versions? I think there might have been things that were actually like B-sides, perhaps. But it seems to be it was a kind of very comprehensive package for the band itself. And as you say, you know, it's good for them to finally get a bit of a, I know there was a few live versions, wasn't there? It's good for them to kind of get their moment in the sun. Surprising that it had taken so long, really. You would have thought that, I don't know, maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago or post BDI, there might have been some interest in doing it. I suppose there's obviously a lot more of a nostalgia factor now. And also I think that the label that released it, the Demon Music Group, are kind of going through the archives a bit and releasing a lot of old stuff. Like they did the Caught in a Landslide, Kevin Cummins box set. And I think they've done the Long Pig stuff as well.
Yeah.
And I guess for the kind of lesser leading lights of Britpop, that these are getting more of the chance because the main Britpop bands have been archived and re-released to quite an extent, but there's still a market for it. But I enjoyed it. Similar to what yourself, I don't know how much I'll go back to it. Listen to it a couple of times. I do want to listen to it again because it always takes me a good few listens before I can make a proper decision on something. I listened to it three or four times, like, yeah, it's good, and then kind of put it by, because I mean, it was like, what is it, September, I think it came out. Is this my life? It's killing me somewhere. It's killing me somewhere. Yeah. Is this my life? It's killing me somewhere. It's killing me somewhere. But from Andy, yeah, like you, I loved Glock. I thought Glock was better. The first album was better than the second because there's a bit more stuff, vocals and a bit more, I'd say, moved on. I mean, once again, I don't know how often you're going to listen to it because it's, you know, it's a long old album. It's like an hour and a half. It is, I don't want to say background music, but it's not. You have to be in a certain mood to listen to it, I think. You know, I don't think you could really listen to it on the way to work or for going for a run or indeed, but if you're having like a nice peaceful walk or a chilled out evening, it's perfect. But it's has to be relevant to us. I think it has to be appropriate to a certain time. You have to be in a certain mood to get it. But I mean, yeah, Andy as Glock, you know, the output last year was ridiculous. You know, he did a bonus Christmas single, lots of his own kind of new versions of his solo album stuff, like the Indica mixes of view from halfway down and things like that. You know, he's really making good on his belief of, or you know, his thought process of, you know, when David Bowie passed away, there was only so much time. He's really going for that, isn't he? You know, he's probably up, you know, probably going for it. I mean, I think we can assume there'll probably be a new Ride album this year as well, because they're touring. So yeah, he's properly getting his head down and doing it, which is great. You know, more material the better, as far as I'm Flash Weir concerned.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I agree. And yeah, as I was about to say that actually, yeah, it was the David Bowie thing, wasn't it, that he said to in the interview with me. It's like, yeah, wow, that's great, you know, because I think there is too much sort of emphasis on, oh, we're going to do one album of 12 songs every 3 years, and it's like, there's no need, you know, like, you know, surely musicians can do more than that. The Beatles did multiple albums per year. There's no reason why you have to stick to that touring schedule. So, you know, it is great that he can just knock this stuff out, and he's got enough of a fan base that will listen to it, and you know, so it's cool.
You're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, and your machinery isn't working right. Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, stop the press. This is James here in the future on the 11th of January, a few days later. And and Andy Bell has just dropped a single and has announced that he's releasing another album next month in February. So here is the new Andy Bell single, which is called Something Like Love.
Remember days of chasing a reeling, playing shoes to block out the factory. Lost in a reverie of future days. La 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 la. It's all been seen somewhere before me. Now time's not on our side. See the flicker as a fire starts to burn. It's not enough. Burn down the world for me. Use a mirror to remember and look back with something like.
So I really like that from Andy Bell. Fantastic to have him back again, like I was saying to Richard then. Amazing, hardest working man in show business. All the Glock stuff that's come out. Put out the first album, View From Halfway Down, in 2020, and now he's coming back again with another one. It's amazing. It's really, really good that he just cracks on and gets this stuff done. But it's good as well. It's really good stuff, and very impressive. Really looking forward to the album. Great work, Andy Bell. All right, let's go back to me and Richard.
Good. All right. And then, that's the album side. And then I also, the other thing I asked was highlight of the year. Liam Summer Live Show's got 8%. Noel New Tracks and Best Of got 12%. Liam Sells Out Nebworth, which I thought was going to win it, got 34%. But then Nebworth Released got 46%. So that's that sort of understandable. So I think that the, you know, Liam, I didn't see him this summer. I know he did the NHS gig and he did the few festival dates, didn't he? Like Reading and Leeds being the biggest one. And that was great. That was great to have him back. I mean, I know it was pretty much like a rehash of the previous tour. It wasn't really anything new or different than the previous ones, but you know, as I say, it was just that great for him to be out there in that window. And then he goes and bloody announces Nebworth and sells it out. And he announces the second day and sells it out. It's ridiculous.
The Nebworth stuff's mad. But I mean, I did go to one of the gigs. I went to Reading and Leeds, but it felt like it was for about a month because like they were all on TV as well. I think it was Transmit and Isle of Wight because they were all on TV. You had Liam basically on every Friday night for like over in early September, which was good. But yeah, I just say it was kind of the same sets, but you know, it was offset just by that relief of being able to go to gigs again and just having a big kind of communal experience. And you know, as we know, there's very few better than Oasis songs primarily to kind of, you know, have that communal feeling which we have been denied for 18 months. So that was, you know, great in and of itself. And yeah, it was very cathartic. I mean, I lost my voice after Reading for a good couple of days. My voice was properly shredded because I literally sang every word. So I enjoyed it, and I think obviously a lot of other people did. I mean the Nebworth thing is still mad. Do you know, actually, I don't know if we've had this conversation, I read an interview that, do you know what the actual confirmed attendance for Nebworth is going to be next year?
No, don't know.
80,000 both nights.
I think there was a lot of going back and forth at the time of, you know, well, what was it? And I think Gigs and Tours had said, but a lot of people saying 125 just because that's the famous Nebworth figure. But yeah, no, 80, I think, makes sense. But I mean,
it's still
160,000 over 2 days. And that doesn't include the other shows, does it? The other massive outdoor shows he's booked as well. I mean, he'll play to probably a million people over that summer, you know. Mm. And that's not just festivals where, you know, you're not necessarily coming to see, you know, Liam. That is people paying to come and see him. So it's, you know, we just continue to be amazed by the comeback from where he was, you know, in the end of BDI. It still boggles the mind. And as I said, and this is now going above and beyond where he even was in the last tour.
Yeah, I mean, this, you would have to assume this is the zenith. You know, I don't know that he's going to be able to do much. Well, who knows? He's the way he's gone, maybe. But, you know, Nebworth? Is it Murrayfield or Hampden? And then City of Manchester, you know, three Uber gigs, all of which will be huge. I would presume he'll maybe do. I mean, he's doing a lot of other foreign festivals. Will he do a lot of UK festivals? Maybe not, but I would assume there'll be another UK tour for the album, probably in the latter half of next year. You do run out of superlatives, given it's, you know, one man standing on the middle of a stage, barely interacting with the crowd and just singing. But, you know, we know better than anyone that's the effect of that man, his voice, and that they have is, you know, it's up there with the greats. It's universal. I mean, I was a little bit cynical about the fact that the Nebworth dates were announced after all the PR had been done for the Nebworth film, and et cetera. I think that left a bit of a sour taste, but, you know, Liam kind of said in an interview, you know, I've been asked about it for years, if I'm going to do Nebworth again, it seems like the time is now. You know, he's probably very aware that, or certainly his management team, Debbie, et cetera, will be very aware that this is probably the golden time. I don't know much, you know, if he still have the same legs on a fourth album, you know, it'll still sell out. But, you know, I think the comebacks combined with the real thirst and appetite for live music again makes it the perfect time to do it. And they, you know, fair play to them. They've struck while the iron's hot with it. You know, unfortunately, as I say, I'm embittered because I can't go to any of them. That's why I'm hoping for some other live dates next year. But it's yeah, you like I say, you kind of use run out of superlatives for it, don't you, really?
It's ridiculous. Yeah, I've got the gig list here. So we've got Etihad on the 1st of June, then Nebworth, Belfast, Ormu Park, Hamden in Glasgow, then Copenhagen festivals, 2 days there, festival in Lisbon, festival in Madrid, festival in Athens and Italy. So yeah, so he's got a busy old summer. And then Noel has booked his slightly less impressive, but he's doing forests, and which is a bit bizarre. And I heard them on the, that was something that, you know, a rare occasion on Matt Morgan where he does ask something interesting. You know, I think it was a fan question, why have you booked gigs in forests? And he just said, I don't know, that's what's been booked for me. And so yeah, so it's a little bit strange, but I mean, it's nice to see him in sort of that more sort of intimate environment, I suppose. But yeah, Dundee, Slessor Gardens, Rugeley Cannock Chase Forest, Northwich Delamere Forest, Colwyn Bay, Kenwood House in London, Peace Hall, Halifax, Cannons Marsh Amphitheatre round your way in Bristol, and then St Anne's Park, Dublin. Very, very weird.
Yeah, and the Bristol day hasn't sold out yet either, because you've got to keep on seeing tailored ads on my various, well, on my phone, that kind of pushing me to go for it. Right. I mean, there isn't a huge Britpop contingent out here in the Southwest, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And certainly in Bristol, it's quite a cool city. You know, Britpop and guitar music is kind of frowned upon generally. Yeah. But these are all, I'm convinced, and I said this 2 years ago, obviously before everything happened, these are all precursors to Glastonbury, I think.
Yeah.
I think.
Has that been confirmed?
No. So what? Okay. What, from my understanding, is that they're going to, it'll be as it was supposed to be in 2020. It'll be McCartney headlining and Noel subbing him.
Right.
That's my understanding of what it'll be. And that seems about right, because there's very few other people Noel would sub headline. And obviously, as you say, he's in Bristol on the Wednesday. You know, all he has to do is pop down.
Makes sense. 20 miles.
Yeah, all he has to do is pop down 20 miles. I mean, when's the Dublin date?
I've gone off it now. Hold on. Okay. It's all right. We'll edit this a little bit out. Dublin is... Yeah, the Dublin date's the 5th of June.
5th of June. Oh, right. Okay. So, yeah. So he's in Bristol Wednesday of Glastonbury. We know he loves Glastonbury. It's going to be a big deal as well, because it will be 18 years since he last appeared at Glastonbury. So,
wow.
Yeah. The last time... Yeah, it was Oasis in 2004. He's not played there as the High Flying Birds.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Goodness me, okay.
Because that's been I started going to Glastonbury regularly in like 2009, and it's kind of always been a thing of like, I'm, you know, want to see Noel there at some point. But yeah, he's just, every year I was hoping he'd be there, but he's never done it. So it seems hopefully the stars aligned. If that is the case, I mean, I'll be, shoot me down, I might be wrong, but I'd be very surprised if I am, if that's not what happens.
I mean, why else would you be in Bristol on Wednesday, June 22nd? It's just, yeah, it just makes sense, doesn't it? Like that time I supported Blur in Reading. When I say supported, I was like playing 24 hours earlier than them, so I was supporting them, but I just turned up an hour a day early. But I still supported Blur at the Alicat in Reading, so there you go. But they were there for a warm-up for Reading, obviously. So cool. All right. Well, look, that's, you know, that's I mean, next year we're going to have these massive gigs from Noel. We're going to have these massive gigs from Liam. We're going to have these, you know, slightly more intimate gigs from Noel, and hopefully some of these festivals. Plus, like we're saying, we're going to have Liam's album, which then went on sale with the Nebworth tickets. So that's guaranteed number one, because, you know, you had to, you know, if you bought the album, you got that pre-release. So when is that due out? May, I think it was.
Sometime in May.
And then, and there's still no word of a Noel release date, but you've got to think that, you know, we know he's finished demoing it and he's going into recording it now. So probably end of the year, I would have guessed for the Christmas market.
Yeah, he's from what he said on Matt Morgan, he says he's likely early 2023. He says he's going to spend the whole year doing it, but then we know how contrary he is anyway, you know. And I have to say, if he's, but judging by that new track, you know, they're probably, and they have to be recorded, obviously, but they sound pretty finished to me. And then there might be tweaks and adjustments on the way, but I can't see how it's going to take a year. Obviously, he's touring, etc. But I struggle to see how it's going to take a year. But whatever. And we've also got, you know, imminently Noel's appearance on the David Bowie live stream on this weekend.
Yeah, on the 8th.
Which I'll be watching. I think it's funny, his choice of song. I can already hear him doing it. The song is Valentine's Day from the Next Day album, which right. Noel loves that album, and it's one of the certainly of David Bowie's later period, one of the most traditional songs, right. Traditional guitar songs. I can almost hear Noel doing it, so I wasn't even slightly surprised when he did that. But I imagine Noel, you know, probably have a few more little odds and sods that will probably go throughout the year, perhaps, you know, who will presumably keep doing the Matt Morgan podcast. We haven't really discussed the Nebworth releases, have we, really, when talking about last year, I guess?
No. I suppose, it's a very good point. It was, you know, it was great to see it. Obviously, so we had the cinema release, which was really cool to see it on a big screen. I know some people had sort of had a whinge that maybe the audio in their cinema wasn't that great. I think it was good in mine. It wasn't as loud as when you're at a gig, and it's deafeningly loud, but it was just really, really cool to see it on the big screen. And then, yeah, and like I said all along, when I said, you know, when we get the Blu-ray, I'm probably not going to bother watching the film again. It's really going to be about the live ones. And I've watched both nights on the live, which was great. I probably prefer watching the Sunday just because I'm not as distracted by trying to see myself all the time. So I can't help it. On the Saturday, every time I watch it, every time it pans the crowd, I'm always like, is that no. But, you know, because I kind of know where I was. I was at the front of the second barrier, well, like five people back from the front of the second barrier. So I know where I was. That is very annoying to constantly be trying to see myself until it gets dark. Then you got no chance. But I thought it was really good. I'd like, I know we talked about it before, but it's disappointing that, you know, we didn't get more behind the scenes stuff, you know, more behind the scenes kind of, you know, backstage. More of the other support bands. You know, it would have been lovely to get that sort of stuff rather than, you know, just like the gigs themselves. I think the gigs themselves are really well shot. Dick Carruthers did a great job, you know, and I'm pleased that it comes up. Dick Carruthers, you know, he does get the credit for it. I wasn't sure if that would be the case. Because I think he does a great job. Obviously, they're fantastic shows. You know, well captured. And I don't really understand why it's taken 25 years for them to come out.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've probably answered that with the fact that it was, you know, the 25th anniversary, I guess. But I mean, it was good that they've finally gone to, like, they really went to town on it. So you've got, as I say, you had the film, but I was surprised in the end that they released both nights. You know, I thought you might get a mishmash of both, but, you right. know, both nights on the DVD. I suppose you didn't get both nights on the audio package, which they can probably review that a bit further down the line. But, you know, the vinyl, the streaming release was quite good. Like you, I couldn't really, you know, make out which night was which. I kind of could actually, because obviously knew the bootleg so well. But it was nice to get, as I said before, My Big Mouth and It's Getting Better Man finally get a proper kind of release. You know, the Nebworth book, the Jill Fermanowski book, I thought was great. And similarly, obviously, I like the Supersonic book as well, which is kind of tied in with it. It was released more or less around the same time, and once again kind of ends at Nebworth. You know, as I think I probably said to you at Speakeasy, you know, a book based around people interviewing quotations of people with Oasis is a really good idea. And, you know, I can't imagine where they got that. but yeah, it's and also part of me kind of hopes as well, like they can maybe put it to bed now and people can also perhaps stop wanging on about Nebworth so much almost. I know it sounds bad, but now we've got an exhaustive package of it. I'm kind of hoping that, you know, they can maybe, you know, focus on Main Road a little bit, or indeed the later parts of the career. You know, the history, the historic gig and the historic event has hopefully been given the recognition it deserves, and hopefully we can kind of, yeah, now put it to bed.
Funny, I'm going to be interviewing soon this guy called Patrick Willems, who's a YouTuber who does stuff on films and a big Oasis fan, and he was talking about how to make a great music biopic and where people tend to go wrong on music biopics. And he talked about an Oasis music biopic and how actually it would be, you know, if you based it on the Be Here Now period, that would be an incredible, you know, incredible time. And I don't think we are going to get like a Supersonic part two, because it's funny, Supersonic the film ends at Nebworth. Now we've had Nebworth, you know, which is almost, so it's almost like part two, isn't it? Because then we've got the full Nebworth, and now it's like, okay, well, what's next? Well, surely now the next thing is Be Here Now, but I don't think we're going to get much Be Here Now tied in stuff. I can't see them, because we had the big reissue with the Chasing the Sun stuff, but we got a couple of the demos. I mean, I'm aware that there's demos kicking around. I know there's other stuff kicking around that could be released, but you know, I don't think we're going to get a package. Really, we could do, I suppose, but I doubt it.
I agree. Although it's the 25th anniversary, you know, this 2022, they might do something along the lines. I mean, they'll probably do what they did with Definitely Maybe and Morning Glory, do like picture discs or whatever. But yeah. I mean, I was thinking about this early on. Like, there's no such thing as a quiet year in Oasis land now, is there? Do you know what I mean? Because you've got, well, I mean, obviously you've got the two very active brothers and you've got Ride, and well, that's kind of it for the music side of things. But you've also got, because Oasis are at that level now of, you know, Bowie, the Beatles, the Who, the Stones, all that kind of super uber classic bands, there's obviously a huge heritage market for it. So, you know, there is, yeah, like I said, there's no such thing as what we would regard as a quiet year. And this year was actually, although there wasn't much new music, it was actually loads of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say the books, the DVDs, blah, 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 blah. This year, there's likely to be something else, 25th anniversary Be Here Now, but they'll find something. You know, as they've said before, there's always an anniversary of something. Yeah. So, you know, because they're now a heritage act and a, you know, frankly, a cash cow. You know, I don't think we should be surprised if something more comes up. But you're right, I think as much as we'd want to see some exciting Be Here Now stuff, or some biopic stuff, I think Noel in particular would certainly clamp down on that, I would have thought.
Yeah, and I don't want him to do, you know, I know that when they did the remastered, do you know what I mean? And the discussion was apparently to do the whole album. I don't want that. Like, Be Here Now is Be Here Now. Like, I never liked the remastered version of, do you know what I mean? I think they stripped away it, you know, what I think was great about it, just the over-the-topness and all the thousands of guitars and everything. That's what I want. And I think if they strip that away from Be Here Now, I think it would be, it wouldn't be what we want it to be. You know, we want that personally, but, you know, I mean, I'd be interested to hear it, like similar to like the Let It Be Naked when they did that a few years ago. But, yeah, anyway, we shall see.
Yep, we will, but yeah, it's shaping up to be another good one.
Yeah, another great year to be sad old Oasis fans. But cool. All right, Richard, well, look, thank you very much for your time, and I'm sure we'll be in touch again very soon when something else interesting in the world of Oasis happens, because, you know, you're the only person to go to, you're the expert on this stuff. People say to me on like you know, messages and things. Oh, James knows more about Oasis. And no, I'm quite far down the list on what you are the top. So I will hold you in that regard.
That's very kind of you, James. Always good to chat.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's my positive niceness out of the way. For you. I'm going to take the piss out of you for the rest of the year. Cool. All right, mate. All the best.
Great. And you. Cheers.
Bye.
Maybe I'll never be all the things that I want to be. But now is not the time to cry. Now's the time to find out why. I think you're the same as me.
So thank you very much to Richard. Always great to catch up with him. I just dropped in there the Noel Live Forever that he did for the radio a couple of months ago, because I think we didn't mention that. And that was definitely a highlight of the year for me. Really cool, sort of different version of Live Forever. So that was cool. And also we got two Bob Dylan covers from Noel this year. We had the Mighty Quinn that he did on the Sky Arts documentary, and then we had the other track he did on that BBC Sofa Sessions, which is where the Live Forever came from, which is the Dylan cover, You Ain't Going Nowhere. So let's have a little bit of those. All right, that'll do it for today. Thank you very much for listening to the Oasis podcast. And most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is, and it's greatly, greatly appreciated. I sent out a load of patron stuff at the end of last year, basically to everyone that had piped up and given me their address. So if you've given me your address and you haven't had anything, then do feel free to get back in touch, because I might have forgotten about you, basically, or it might be lost in the post, especially if you're in New Zealand or something. So, yeah, all good. And as I've teased on a couple of recent episodes, there is something very cool we've got in the works to go out to patrons. So if you would like to be a patron, then head over to patreon.com/oasispod, where you can support me, support the podcast. And yeah, it really does mean a lot. And thank you to everyone that does. All right, you can also follow on the social media, Oasis Podcast on Twitter and Facebook, and Oasis Pod on Instagram, but Twitter's the main one. That's where I'm normally doing polls and asking people's opinions and things like that. One other thing, if you're on the Patreon, you can join the Discord. So if you are a patron and you haven't got on the Discord, then drop me a message and I'll ping you a link for that. Do subscribe on YouTube if you can. I've pinged up quite a few bits on YouTube, and the plan is to check up quite a lot more on there. Just to give you a heads up, the last episode I did, where we did the Britpop Knockout Tournament Part 1, Part 2 is going to be coming shortly, but it's going to live over on the Indie Alternative podcast. So once that comes up, keep an eye on social medias and I will tell you how to get hold of that and give it a listen. So I think that'll about do us. Just to say, this year is going to be quite exciting. It's going to be our 5th anniversary of the podcast coming up in April, which will be exciting. And also, I'm up to, 175 episodes or something now. So assuming I do manage to do 25 episodes this year, then we'll get to 200 episodes at some point, which would be amazing. And also, we are currently around about 860,000 listens since coming to Audio Boom.
So if we do similar numbers that we normally do, we will hit 1 million listens this year, which would be an absolutely incredible milestone to achieve. So, yeah, so I'm really looking forward to those things personally, if they come up on the podcast. And yeah, and as I said, in the meantime, we will continue to try and get cool guests, both associated with Oasis and also people from our community of friends and collaborators and other people with interesting stories to tell. And I'm always looking for new guests and new ideas for episodes that might be interesting. So if you have one of those, then you know where to get hold of me, oasispod@gmail.com, or over on the socials where my messages are always open. All right, that will do it for today. Thank you very much for listening. Stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.